We are back, and I'm sure you've missed us badly. After a few months of absence, the Spielverlagerung podcast is back, and we've decided to dedicate our fourth episode to the big one, the Champions League final. My name is Konstantin Eckner, editor for Spielverlagerung, and once again, I'm pleased to introduce to you an illustrious panel. First, coming over from the German edition of Spielverlagerung, Martin Raffel.
Hi, I like that you say Spielverlagerung.
Yeah.
Like it's not a German word.
No, it's not. It's internationalized.
Okay.
It's part of the international dictionary.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Okay, nice to have you on our panel. Second, our man in the United States of America, Adnan Osman Bazic.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for that amazing pronunciation of my name.
I think it's Osman Basic.
Because he's
No.
Osman Bašić in Bosnia.
Osman Bašić. Yeah, right. Okay. And last but not least, the man of sharp-witted analysis, Judah Davis.
Hello.
Woo!
Okay, you see the mood is good. And yeah, we want to talk about the Champions League final. Okay, first, let's talk about the participants. The great club of Real Madrid takes on the equally great club of Juventus FC. So let's start with the Blancos of course, Spanish capital. Adin, what do you think about Real Madrid under Zidane? How have they been under him this season?
I think they've obviously been pretty successful since they're in the final and they won the league. But I think their style of play is... it is kind of defensive while in possession. They have like a certain structure where they have many players in defensive positions when they're going to attack. Ronaldo plays basically like the second striker all the time next to Benzema, and Benzema will open space for him. He'll move out to the left wing to combine with Marcelo and Cruz out there. And of course, they have amazing fullbacks who can just break through the wings very dynamically, and Modric and Cruz will support them out wide. And also Modric has great dribbling. They can play long passes to wing. And depending off if it's Bale or if it's Isco can play more like a 10 underneath the two strikers. If it's Bale, he's more moving between the middle and the wing where Carvajal and Modric go. And of course, Casemiro is just kind of like a destroyer in the middle. Casemiro, Varane, Ramos, these guys are hard to counterattack. And they rely a lot on just crosses into the box to Ronaldo and Benzema, who are just killers in the box.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I agree. Martin, I know that you have been critical towards Real Madrid as of late. What is your criticism? What do you think of them right now?
I think that the big problem that I have with Real, and at the same time their biggest strength, is that they their play is based on the least interesting zones on the pitch. So usually a lot of possession that they have is in the fullback zones around the fullbacks. Kroos and Modric are going to the wings pretty wide and circulate ball from wing to wing with support from the fullbacks and with the center backs at the back. And so what they do, first of all, and what their, let's say, plan A is, just to keep the ball and put it from wing to wing, which is very, very uncreative and not very dangerous and very boring. But as they can do that very, very well, and they have Kroos and Modric in the decisive positions for that strategy, they can do that very good, and they can create a big stability from that, and therefore they have a certain consistency in their performances. And it's very hard to attack these zones because they are the least interesting zones. They are most far away from your own goal, so you have to open most space that is possible to get access in these zones. And that's quite a big problem when you face them, because they have quite an easy if you try to play defensive by yourself, they will have a lot of possession by themselves, and they will dominate the game, and it will be hard to beat them on this base. Also, they do have quite a few weaknesses. The defending is not so good, except when they play attack pressing, what they do from time to time, that is quite good. But usually they play rather deep, and you can, if you want, you can dominate the game by yourself, and you also can create scoring opportunities, because they don't defend very intense, and they have a quite basic organization in defense, and of course they are individually very good also in defending, but most opponents were able in the Champions League to score against them, which is no accident, and therefore it's really quite a strange situation, because there are quite a few things that they do not very good, and the things that they can do best are very uninteresting things, and it creates something like how to say it on English, a zero situation, with when both it can happen that both teams just agree on doing nothing when Real plays until the last 20 minutes or so, then Real begins to attack, or when the opponent tries to put pressure on the wings, the space is in the middle open, and then Kroos and Modric, or maybe Ronaldo or Benzema or Isco, go into the central zones, and then they start to play in the interesting zones. And that is a very, just from a perspective of match theory, it's a very strange situation, I think.
Judah, so when I'm listening to Martin's words, to his statement, so normally, or I mean, as we know, the Real Madrid is often called the white ballot. Is it just a ballot that presents ugly dance?
I think you could say that. Subjectively, you know, I think Martin and Adin have touched on it, but there are a number of, I'd say, concepts or like the way they play that I don't quite fancy, if you like. So it's in terms of subjective perception, I'd say warm to their style of play. I think as Martin mentioned, they are quite based on avoiding the opponent, which it makes sense to an extent, but I think when you have around six players on average that are playing outside of the opponent's defensive block, then the circulation is quite intentionally in the U fashion. So they're using the wings a lot. And when you've got players like they do, like Marcelo, Cruz, Carvajal, they can actually play their way out of these situations, even if it is under high pressure. But objectively, I think you have to say that they are obviously very strong. And that's not even just in terms of the players they have. It's also the way that they play and the questions that it poses for the opponents. So I think if you're trying to press them and they've got that many people outside the defensive block, they can escape through the wings and then just use the qualities of the players to just connect inside. And if you try too hard to get access to the players on like Cruz, Modric, Casemiro plus the two defenders and the fullbacks, then the spaces will inevitably open up in the center and then they can get past you that way. Or if you try to press too hard, you have got the risk of guys like Ronaldo and Benzema who can just run into depth behind you. So it's very tough in terms of coming up against them as a manager.
Yeah, I'm picking up that. I remember, and especially in the German media after Real Madrid beat Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals, there was this discussion that if Bayern had applied a more sophisticated tactical approach, they could have beat Real Madrid, but instead it was basically a match of one-on-one situations, right? And then you're often or usually out-muscled, outplayed by Real Madrid, because they are a collective of so many great players, just when you look at the individuals. Is it maybe that Real Madrid is right now the embodiment of individual-based football, maybe even like representing something that an approach in international football towards more individual-based football?
I don't think I would say that they are being like the symbol of individualism or anything like that. I mean, I think they just have a lot of good individual players, but they have some sort of collective way of playing. And I don't know. I just don't like looking at the whole team in terms of individuals. I think when you look at Bayern and Real Madrid, my memory of that match was that when Bayern had 11 players, they actually were playing much better. And it was a lot of situations where Bayern would also switch to the wings, and then Robin and Lahm would attack on one wing, Ribery and Alaba on the other wing, things like this. And generally they had better pressing and they just had a better control that game until they got a red card. I just think Real Madrid have star players, I guess, in every position, and the way they play is kind of safe, very safe. And then they just play lots of crosses onto, you know, Benzema, Bale, Ronaldo for them to jump up and score headers or on the crosses and things like that. But I wouldn't say it's kind of very individual, but I feel because they have such a high individual quality, they can make such a system where it's kind of the uninteresting zones, the safety, they can make that still sort of have a offensive output to score goals and things like that. But in terms of playing with Bayern, I don't think Bayern didn't have a sophisticated system, or that Bayern was trying to play against them 1v1 or anything like that. I think Bayern actually was playing better while they had 11 players, and they just ended up getting a red card. That game was full of referee influence, but I didn't think it was that Bayern. I don't see the reason to criticize Bayern so hard in the media, how you're saying.
Yeah, sure. That's why I wanted to pick up the entire discussion. I mean, it's a few weeks ago, but still, something that's just stuck in my mind. Speaking of star players, Gareth Bale is questionable, so he is not totally fit. You won't be able to play for 90 or even 120 minutes. Martin, recently they've used a formation including Isco and what looks like an diamond in the midfield. How do you think, or how do you rate that formation compared to their rather customary 4-3-3?
I think the difference is very, very low between the both systems. They basically have the same base structure. Ronaldo basically plays the same position. Benzema plays the same position. They don't really change a lot in the role of the two strikers in compared to their roles in the 4-3-3. And the roles of Kroos and Modric are also pretty much exactly the same. And the only difference is that they don't have a third individual attacking player who's going to shoot a lot and dribble a lot onto the opponent's defense line. But instead of that, they have a combination player who goes in freely through the midfield zones and tries to create little overloads and gives you even more opportunities and makes it even easier to keep the ball and to circulate the ball. And maybe also they can go a bit more into the half space, at least the defensive half spaces with Isco, because he dropped there and he connects with Modric mostly a lot. But they don't really use that as a base for combinations forward. They keep keeping the ball, and it doesn't change much. I think it would be an interesting idea to play that formation with these players in a more offensive and a more creative and ambitious way. I think that would be very interesting to see, but in the way how they play, it's more like they play a 4-3, their usual 4-3-3, or let's call it a 2-5-5 3 system in possession, or 2-5-0-3 maybe in possession, with just one of their attackers roaming through midfield.
Yeah, so when we look at Isco's role right now, that he's somewhat of a number 10. I mean, as you mentioned, there's no right winger, and then of course you have one right back on the outside lane. The problem is, or there's another player questionable, Daniel Cavaral. So that could mean that Danilo will play as the right back. Do you think that will weaken them, that Cavaral is probably out, Martin?
Obviously, because Cavaral is very good. And he can be very decisive for their offensive danger, but I'm not... I don't know Danilo too well. Maybe the other guys have more of a strong opinion on Danilo.
Anyone?
I don't know Danilo too well either, but from what I remember, I don't think he's been nearly as impressive as Carvajal, and he seems a bit more linear and athletic in that sense, and Carvajal's a little bit more diagonal in the way he plays, just from my memory.
Danilo is a bit less press resistant, I think, which is pretty key, especially in the way they play, trying to avoid the opponents in the center, use the wings, and then resist pressure from there to try and create breakthroughs, really.
Right, and he will take on Mario Mandzukic, who's actually the left winger of Juventus Turin, which brings us to the old lady. I guess we can switch to the second participant of the final. Juventus, second final in 3 years. Just a more general question. Judah, what do you think? Are they the most underrated team in Europe right now, especially in the mainstream football media and in the mainstream football sphere?
Potentially. I'm not really too aware of what the general media makes of Juventus, to be honest with you, because over here in England, they don't. Well, most of the pundits don't, I think, anyway, don't watch much European football apart from English football.
Yeah,
sure. I think Juventus are very strong. They've been my favourites to win the competition. As in, I think they're going to win the competition from the quarterfinal draw. So I was pretty confident they'll knock Barcelona out. And I predicted that they would win the competition from there. Because obviously I watch quite a lot of Serie A and their games in the Champions League as well. And they are renowned for their defensive structure and how good they are defensively. So the individual defenders, Vinucci, Barzagli, Chiellini, are actually very, very dominant in defensive situations. It allows them to press in the manner like they did against Barcelona, where they were man-to-man all over the pitch. And any long balls, crosses, passes into the 10 space, they can close it down dynamically. And because they're so dominant, they can just win challenges. And it allows everyone to go and play higher, and they can start counter-attacks, winning the ball that way. One thing that probably is underrated, actually, is their game with the ball. And their base formation in recent weeks has been the sort of 4-4-2, where Mandzukic plays as a left winger, and you've got Dybala and Higuain up front. And one thing that they do really well from this base structure is rotate. So Dybala is often seen popping up in the right half space, and Kedira can move a little bit higher on the left, and then that leaves Pjanic there in the centre. And so from that base 4-4-2, they switch into more of a 4-3-3 like structure. And in the game against Monaco, they were actually playing with a back three, so which seemed like quite a good choice, because they had a immediate overload against Monaco's two strikers. And one thing they did really well was use rotations between Dybala as the striker and Dani Alves as the right fullback. It was actually quite reminiscent of the Messi and Dani Alves axis. But from his starting position in the right half space, Dybala would drift out towards the wing, taking the left fullback with him, and then he could just receive passes. And at the same time, Dani Alves can come in off his line into the right half space and then receive layoffs and combinations like that. And I think that was actually involved in their first goal in the away game against Monaco. So things like that are really strong in this Juventus side. And of course, with the players that they've got, Mandzukic, Danucci, Chiellini, they are a big threat from set pieces as well. So yeah, very strong side.
Yeah, you've mentioned a few facets or different facets of their game. What do you think could be the key component in the final against Real Madrid? Is there something that could be the deciding factor that they will maybe win the match?
I wouldn't point to a single decisive factor. But, I mean, considering the opponent they're coming up against, the strength of the defenders in defensive situations, particularly within defending their own box, is going to be really important. Of course, we've already mentioned that Real Madrid do use crosses a lot, and they've got Ronaldo and Benzema, whose movement in the box is often very, very good, very hard to defend against. But when you have defenders like Chiellini and Bonucci and Barzagli, they are actually very strong aerially, and they're always very, very strong in terms of defending their box. The wingers also do drop back to help out as well. So I think defending their box will definitely be one of the main factors in getting a result in this game. But of course, you have to go and score as well. So I think you'd also look at their game with the ball and how much they can get Dybala on the ball and have him combine him with Dani Alves. And then looking for those crosses towards the far post for Mandzukic, because those are a big way of their scoring goals as well.
Yeah, Alin, Bonucci, Barzagli, Chiellini, three human wrecking machines, I guess. imagine you're a Massimiliano Allegri. What do you think? What is the best solution? Back four, back five against Real?
That's an interesting thought. I like the way they have their attack pressing in either shape. I could see them going with something like a back three, because they, especially with Italy, you'll see them do attack pressing where the back three are kind of against three strikers or something like this, or three, you know, if Isco's there, just those three. It might be a little bit more complicated, but Chiellini has showed that he'll follow people into the middle pretty high during attack pressing, so it'd be probably pretty nice with their three to have when they attack press, to have those three dominant guys in the middle and the back for any direct passes to compete with those guys. But yeah, with a trade-off of that is to have less players in forward positions to pass into. But I think if they can dominate an attack pressing, it won't allow Madrid to get into their certain 2-5-3 structure or anything like that as easily, because they're disrupting the amount of time they have on the ball, and the amount of movement someone can make when you're being pressed is much less. So the Cruz Modric dropping out to the wings is going to be more difficult, and it might help more with having wingbacks to pressure the fullbacks of Real Madrid if it does get into those situations. So I think that'd be an interesting way of combating kind of Real Madrid's 2-5-3. But obviously you can also do the 4-4-2. They're just as good in pressing with that. Dani Alves and Alexandro, and then you have an extra guy in the middle. Maybe Khedira would be the extra guy playing, or however they do that. That would also be an interesting to see.
So, Martin, you've already talked about Zidane, Real Madrid's coach. So let's take a look at Massimiliano Allegri, the Juventus coach. Do you think, or how do you rate him, and do you think, in comparison to Zidane, maybe does he have any aces up his sleeve? Does he have any tricks so he can outmaneuver Zidane?
I'm not sure if that's a task of him. I think the main, you ask what the single main point is, that the single strength that might be. That might help Juventus. I think the most important point in the duel is that Juventus is a very, very complete team, and they have a very good defense, but they are not defensive specialists for me. They are in any phase of the game, they are good or very good. They are, and it's like if you watch Juventus at any time when you watch inside a game, and any time, no matter where you look at the pitch, they are always doing good stuff. They are not a team that makes super exceptional stuff like Barca at times or other teams, but they have no weaknesses basically. They have nothing. They hardly have anything that's mediocre. It's everything they do is good or very good, and they are very consistent, and they are very stable, and they are very very stable in attacking as well. And that's something that is very special and that is very hard to beat, I think. Also for Real, Real had there were a lot of opponents that made Real problems. They don't play such a ridiculous good league season. They have a worse goal difference than Barcelona. They are hardly super dominant. They are just achieved to be quite consistent and to win the games at the end somehow. But Juve is overall, if you look at all tactical aspects, tactical details, how they play, they are just a better team for me, I think. Of course, Real has more assets to do the exceptional things because they have even more exceptional players. Juventus have very, very good players, but not those super world class players, to call it, like Modric or Ronaldo or Kroos. But overall I think Juve is more stable, and their type of football makes more sense and is more effective overall for me.
All right, with that I think we can finish the first part of our episode. Let's discuss how this match could go. Judah, maybe a general question to start. Who do you think will see more of the ball and why?
That's a tough one. I think Real Madrid will see more of the ball. Of course, it depends on the game state. So if someone was taking only lead, then perhaps the other one would see more of the ball. But generally, at 0-0, I would expect Real Madrid to see more of the ball. And I think they do like to circulate deep with their Modric, Cruz, Casemiro, and the two centre-backs actors. So, yeah, I'm expecting Real Madrid to see more of the ball. Juventus to probably start off with an attack pressing. So trying to disrupt the build-up really high. Probably, maybe, in a similar man-to-man fashion like they did against Barcelona. It would be actually quite interesting to see how Real Madrid play against that.
Yeah. Adin, like, just continuing with that topic, would it be wise for Juventus to be aggressive right out of the gate, or just let them wait and see a little bit what Real can offer? What would be the better approach in your opinion?
I'd like to see them come out and press high, just to have more control, to win the ball back more and not let Madrid get into their desired structure and things like that. Just in general, I feel like it would help them to avoid having to deal with the deep circulation of Real Madrid and things like that. So I think having the ball more and then attacking Real Madrid's defensive shape, which is not very good, that would be more beneficial for them from a complete perspective of all the phases of the game, to high press so you can get the ball back faster and have be defending less, keep their strikers farther away from your goal, and then you have the ball and you can try to exploit the little spaces in between Madrid's block because it's not very compact. So that would be a way that I think would be intelligent when you look at it through all phases, because if you're now not pressing them as high, unless you have a really good strategy of how you're going to press Real Madrid, you know, 2-5-3 or whatever they do in a mid block or something like that, you're going to give up circulation to them, and they're very safe and stable, how we talked about earlier in the podcast. And now when you win the ball, it's very hard to counterattack them for that reason. So if you're trying to counterattack and they have a 2-5-3 or something like this, then it's I feel like just overall in all the game states, it's more difficult for Juventus then, because then you're having a harder time getting access to the ball, and then you're having a harder time counterattacking to get on shots on goal and things like that. So I think it would be nice to watch them come out, get the ball faster, and then force Madrid to be in a defensive block more often.
Yeah, and what do you think?
It be interesting if they would like mirror Real's strategy? Because what I mean is that they might try to let Real play, give Real the majority of the possession for, let's say, the first half or the first 60 minutes or so. Because in the first half, first 60 minutes, Real isn't pushing too much on goals from their own position, but they are more like circulating around, and Juve is quite stable in the defense and not so prone to a sudden strange goal, and they are quite happy with the opponent having the ball, and that they might save some energy for the last 30 minutes or so, and then they try to play more aggressively and try to attack more from their own position. And until this point, they just do it similar to Real, that they circulate the ball in their own between their own defensive players, and let Real run a bit. And because it's just Real is usually a team that comes really out of itself during the finishing phase of the game, and that would be quite a logical approach for Juve to also focus on the last 30 minutes and the rest of the game more or less be happy with being okay, because Real won't be too much better than okay. And I think usually Juve might be even more dangerous when they just try to keep up the ball, because they have a more natural structure and instinct to go for dangerous zones in the right moment.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting, just especially from the perspective also of, if you look at the whole game, that they would be much safer overall, I guess you could say, if they're, you know, not trying to high press the whole time, and that they focus on stability and safety a little bit more in the beginning as well. And approaching a final in that way makes much more sense, the way you explained it.
I think in overall, you could say that the most interesting points of the final will be first, how much attack pressing we are going to see from both sides. That's interesting for both sides. Is Real going to use their attack pressing to get more of the ball and to deny Juventus their position play, or are they more sitting back and just be happy with the opportunity to get counterattacks from their own half? And is Juve going to attack Real's long ball circulation phases, or are they going to be happy with Real got the ball in their own half and it's no problem for us? And second, if they are going to attack the ball circulation of Real, how are they going to achieve that? Are they going to play man against man, or are they going to have a plan to get Kroos and Modric somehow in their cover shadow and force them on Casemiro, or force them on one wing and attack with wingbacks from a back of three, or what will be the tactical plan to disrupt Real's ball circulation if Juve want to disrupt it? I think these are the two decisive questions.
It's actually something I wanted to ask Judah, as you're a Juventus expert, I guess. What do you think, how could the Juventus high press, attack pressing look like? Do they leave Casemiro open or just shut down everything and just wait for Real to misplace a pass? Or what are you going to do? What do you think?
I think we are unlikely to see much high pressing, to be honest. I don't think we'll see much high pressing. I think Juventus will probably be quite content with Real Madrid's deep circulation. So they'll probably, I don't know, play in like a 4-4-2-0, I guess. But the problem with that is, of course, the space between the strikers and then the wingers and the central midfielder on the side. So the
corners deep formation.
Exactly. So I think, like you said, there is the possibility of having a 4-4-2 as your base defensive structure, but having the strikers start a bit wider to try and prevent them playing into Kroos and Modric straight away. And of course, that does leave Casemiro open, but then you could try and trap him in the centre with the strikers coming towards the centre, keeping Kroos and Modric in their cover shadows. And it'll be quite interesting to see how Casemiro would deal with that pressure, because he is, of course, less gifted, less press resistant than Kroos and Modric. So that could be interesting. It's unlikely, but the idea of, I mean, probably with Juventus's lineup, it's probably not the best idea. But a 4-3-3 could be quite interesting against Real Madrid's deep circulation that way, because that way
you say the same,
yeah. Because you could, with the front three, you could block access both to the centre and the half spaces, and then force them wider quicker. And okay, they can still play their way out from there, but it does give you a better chance than leaving Kroos and Modric free to dominate the game.
I think if they play a flat 4-3-3 with three lines and the three midfielders in one line, and also the three strikers in one line, or maybe with a little tendency to 4-3-2-1 with a central striker going higher. They could focus with their half strikers or wingers on Kroos and Modric to keep the ball away from them. Not necessarily man marking, but maybe also just blocking the passing lanes to these two players. The logical space that is going to open up is behind the wingers and between the wingers, so on Casemiro first and besides of the central midfielders second. And a big plus for Juventus is, of course, that they have very, very strong central midfielders who can cover a lot of space. Khedira, first of all, of course. Also Rincon, Osturao. I think Pjanic is also very, he can run a lot, I think. And this are quite good positions for Khedira and the likes. And that would be, it would be quite a logical choice to play like that, I think. Of course, the negative point is that they are not used to play that formation, and they might disrupt their automatisms a little bit.
What about a 3-4-1-2 with the, I think they've used that before with Dybala sort of as a 10, and then you have Mandzukic and Higuain, and then you can kind of do with the two strikers more focused on the half spaces, and maybe the central guy can be a little bit more pressing. Then you have the wing backs who are have a bit more like safety than if you would in a back four, or whoever, if I know they like to use Dani Alves and Alexandro as more of the guys going out to press really long distances on the wing, but maybe against Real Madrid, if you have a back three, that's even more safe. Now you can press out with the wing backs to the Madrid fullbacks, and you still have that central three center backs, and then you have, you know, Pjanic and Khedira in the middle or something like this, and then you can still have sort of like the three narrow front players, and the far side wing back can just tuck in more towards the middle once it goes to one side or anything like that.
Yeah, that's probably a way of achieving a similar way of like blocking the center and the half spaces with the front line, but then also being a bit more adjusted to Juventus' squad, like you said. So wing backs, back three, and instead of having high advanced wingers technically. So I think that could be quite interesting.
I think the 4-3-3 variation would be probably a little bit more dangerous on the counter, because they can send Mandzukic or Dybala or maybe Cortado directly in the behind Kroos and Modric and attack the center backs with their wingers if they win the ball. If they play 3-4-1-2, they have their central strikers against the center backs and Casemiro, and it will be a bit harder to find space and to overload the defensive line of Real. And I feel like Real will come back behind the ball quite fast then. It's maybe a little bit easier to achieve a clear coordination and organization in that formation against Real, because they're a bit more used to it, and it's a bit more clear how to deal with the zones on the wing. But also they would open a bit more space behind the wing backs, and also in central midfield it could happen that just Kroos and Modric just turn and they play with each other through the center, and they switch play from one to each other. I feel like 4-3-3 would be a bit more logical and a bit stronger choice, but 3-4-1-2 is going to fit the Juve a bit better, maybe. I'm not sure.
I'd agree.
Yeah, interesting discussion. I really like the points you made. Adin, something we haven't talked about so far is Real Madrid's counterattacks. I mean, we're all aware that, especially Ronaldo, but also Bale and Benzema, that they offer speed and they can really accelerate once they get behind the back line. What do you think? How could Real set up counterattacks against this Juve side?
I assume they're probably going to play that sort of asymmetric 4-3-3, 4-4-2 type thing where Ronaldo's a little bit closer to Benzema. And, I mean, their counterattacks are typically Benzema's opening space and acting as the target, things like this, and Ronaldo's running directly towards goal while Benzema's starting more central and moving off to the sides. And then this provides kind of opening space for Ronaldo to run directly towards goal. And if Bale's there, he obviously runs directly down through the right half space and is just massive speed. And with Isco, it would be a little bit slowed down, obviously. But I think it also depends on who wins the ball and things like this, when Modric intercepts it or if Marcelo intercepts it clearly and they start running forward in their dribbles, they add a huge danger to the counterattack.
Right. But I also think it depends on where they really intercept the ball. As we mentioned, absolutely, that Ronaldo and Bale, they need some space to accelerate. I mean, they are quite fast. They are very fast. And that's really an asset. There's more to it. And usually I think they tend to then play through the rings when they intercept the ball too close to the goal or just, you know, in a space where it's not really effective to just bump down the field. Right. Maybe when we look at this match, and we have discussed several things, several aspects, which could play out throughout the match, but something we haven't discussed are substitutions, or just the bench and tactical adjustments. Martin, do you have anything in mind? Maybe a super sub on each bench, a match deciding tactical adjustment that could happen.
I subbed Asensio in your monologue.
All right, okay.
He destroyed your monologue because he's fucking crazy.
All right, that's an F-bop. So you think he could be this Real Madrid super sub, someone who can really decide a match in the later stages?
Yeah, I think so. James Rodriguez as well. Morata is not bad. That's at least what I heard, and he knows Juventus. I don't know if that's an advantage for him, but maybe. What the big advantage for Real is that they can just. I think when they really would be with a back to the wall. Segment is of English.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. If they are really with the back to the wall and they need to score one or two goals in little time, they just can change the game a lot. They can like sub Casemiro for Ramos or something like that. They can play Kroos or Modric on the defensive central midfield position. They can push Marcelo higher. They can bring on more creativity. They can focus more on the risky zones, and they can change the whole game a lot. And that's it. I think it's going to be very, very hard to adjust on this. When you are Juventus and you are like 2-0 up, and now you see that the opponent is changing his whole playing attitude, that's quite a big change. On the other hand, Juventus have more tactical details that they can change. They have more formations that they can play, which can always change the game a bit. They can switch between different pressing approaches. They can switch between different players on positions. They can bring, for example, Cuadrado on several positions to create surprising breakthroughs. And I think that's that can be a big advantage as well. Allegri has an opportunity at least to have a plan B for the last minutes if he's back to create a lot of risk. I think he could like play the last 50 minutes with just a back of three without wingbacks, like 3-2-2-3 or 3-diamond-3 or something like that, to basically force Real to play risky counters, and then they might win the ball deep and get counter attacks and so on, and they have the possibility to make it a very fast game and still be a little bit stable at least with their good defenders. So there are a lot of options on both sides how the game is going to develop. But actually I expected more to be a rather calm game, I think.
Calm game, okay. Judah, do you agree? Will it be a calm game?
Like I was saying, I'm not sure there's going to be much high pressing. I doubt it. But it's possible that Allegri will start in a similar fashion to how he did in the first leg against Barcelona, with a high man-to-man pressing, very aggressive. It is possible, but it's unlikely, I think. So calm could be a description, because I think both sides will probably have their build-up quite unchallenged. And in a game as big as the Champions League final, you obviously build in stability through calm circulation is quite a good way to build stability into the game, and it has a psychological aspect of making you feel more comfortable in the game when the opponent isn't creating much danger. So I think we could see both sides using their possession and being unchallenged in that phase of the game, and just using that as a way to build their way into the game. And it could be quite a slow burner. So calm could be a description.
Right. And as for the personnel, is there any game changer on the bench who can come off the bench and set the world on fire?
Asensio.
I mean, of course, Juventus. Is there a game changer on Juventus bench?
I wouldn't say. I think I don't remember if the Croatian guy, is he Croatian?
Piazza.
Yeah, that's him. I think he's injured.
Oh, yeah, yeah. ACL injury or something. Yeah.
That's unfortunate. Because he could have been someone who gives them a bit more of a isolation dribbler, which could be quite interesting in terms of changing their dynamic. Because obviously they've got Mandzukic on the left wing, who you're not going to rely on for dribbles, really. Not for attacking the fullback dribbles anyway. But that could have been interesting. But I think you've got more subs that in the Juventus side anyway, that can change the side structurally, which obviously can change the game in a way, but not like individuals who are going to change the game with like their dribbles or something like that. So I think obviously you've got someone like Lamina and Rincon, who are quite dynamic midfielders, very active without the ball and even with it, obviously. Lamina particularly with like linear runs for counterattacks and things like that. So it can be interesting. Like we talked about the 4-3-3 pressing, for example, the roles of the midfielders are quite based on covering a lot of distance and pressing on the wings, because obviously that's where the opponent will go if you're going to play in that sort of shape. So it could be interesting having someone like Lamine or Rincon coming on and changing to a structure like that. But in terms of individuals who are going to come on and really change the game, I don't think so.
I think it'd be interesting if they play with the back four, then I think someone like Barzagli would be a sort of substitute that'd be very interesting that comes on. Obviously not someone that's going to light the world on fire or whatever. But I think, yeah, depending on what system they use. So if they use back three and Barzagli's in, maybe someone like Cuadrado coming in or Kadira, something like this. Or if they're playing with a 4-4-2, then you can see maybe Barzagli coming in, being an interesting substitution, things like that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm pretty much satisfied with this segment. I don't know if anyone has anything to add. No?
Juventus to the win.
Sure.
Tony Fußballgott.
All right. For all the non-German speakers, there was actually Toni Kroos, football god. Or got a football.
Hard, I mean, to understand.
Yeah, it's hard to understand. Yeah. So I just translated it. Okay, all the non-German speakers.
Even I.
Yeah. So I guess Martin mentioned that he would probably favor Juventus, right? Or you think that's Juventus are the better team? Hmm. Judah thinks Juventus will win. So Arin, what about you?
I guess I'd like Juventus to win, but I just feel like Real Madrid's going to win just because of they always do.
Yeah,
they have Modric and Cruz.
They have Toni Kroos, ergo they win.
Exactly. I mean, you can plan all you want and then they destroy your team.
Yeah, I guess that's a Real Madrid thing, right? Especially these days under Zinedine Zidane, who's also
Toni Kroos.
Under Toni Kroos,
it's a Toni Kroos thing. When you watch into the current football history, it's not so much a Real Madrid thing like it is a Toni Kroos thing.
All right, yeah.
Oh, we shouldn't forget Marcelo as well, by the way, because he was like instrumental against Atletico and Bayern Munich, especially. So,
of course, he plays next to Kroos. It's very
Martin. You should describe why you like Toni Kroos.
Because he's perfect.
Everything
maybe,
about him.
And maybe one a little. I think most people know mostly why Kroos is a very good footballer. A little thing which is a very big thing for him is what I want to add is that he usually. Majority of his passes are played in a way, even when he's under very big pressure, that his teammates can make very easy and very clear actions after it. So when he passes the ball to his teammate, it's very easy to control for the teammate, and they can play very fast out of the situation. And he achieves that even under highest pressure against. In the most difficult situations and structures, and he's just solving situations in a very perfect manner. He's not just It's not just that that his passes reach his teammates in pretty much any situation, but they reach his teammates very, very, very good.
Passing empathy.
So when I read between the lines, so what you want to say is that Toni Kroos can does something Zinedine Zidane couldn't do in his heyday.
I don't know. Maybe he could he can do the one thing that Zidane could have done, and what the one thing that is maybe a big strength of Zidane, which he doesn't get praised for. I think Zidane was quite good to solve pressure situations in a manner that the pressure is really gone and it's not just passed over to your teammate.
Okay, all right. I think that's it for our second segment, and we will be back after a short break. And we are back for our final segment, where we would like to answer your questions. We asked our followers, you on Twitter, to send some questions, and we will start right away with a question from Farkas Jombour. I guess I butchered the name, but apologies for that. He asks, is this Juventus the most tactical team in the world? What do you think? Guys, who wants to answer that?
Answer is a clear yes.
sure, that was the answer, and now the explanation, Judah.
I think when I looked at the question, the thing I'm wondering is whether he means, or sorry, they mean the most or the best tactical team in the world. Because I think if you're asking...
Question is the most tactical team. You have to answer if they are the most tactical team.
Right, well, then I'm going to talk about tangent then.
You can't just answer if they are the best tactical team. That's cheating.
No, I won't do that. Are they the most tactical team in the world? I can't answer that question because I think it doesn't make sense to say that one team is more tactical than another, because I think this is probably quite a general misconception of what tactics are or what they consist of. But I think no team is more tactical than another, because every interaction or every action on the pitch is tactical, whether it's intended by the coach.
That would mean that you are more tactical when you have more actions and more interactions on the field.
But you can't have more actions though, can you?
Because of course you can. You can't actions when you're just standing around and doing nothing. Then you will be the least tactical team in the world. Following this definition, he's basically asking, are they the most intense team on the world?
Okay, but you know, that's not maybe the best definition. It's hard to define it, but I think what I'm trying to say anyway is there is a section of things that we write in tactical pieces, and they might not always be intended by the coach, but it could be like what I call natural tactics. So let's say, for example, I've got a right-footed left winger, I'll keep it very basic, and a left-footed striker. We might have a repeated pattern where the left winger comes inside whilst the striker goes outside, and we play diagonally that way. But I might, as the coach, I might never have worked on that. But if it consistently happens, then it makes sense to talk about all the effects and how it played out in a tactics piece. But it's still tactical, but it's not intended by the coach. It's just natural tactics. So I think it doesn't make sense to say one team is more tactical than another, because every team is, of course, tactical because they're acting on the pitch. But if you mean best tactical team, then they're one of them.
I think me and Martin have talked about it before, where we consider tactics to be organizational plus individual decision making. So I think when most people talk about are they the most tactical, it's almost in a sense to me, it feels like they're asking if the team is the most organized or well-organized team. in the world.
The most defensively organized team, maybe, is what he means. So that's the common misconception about tactics is that tactics is defensive organization, and that's just a small part of tactics, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I guess Juventus at this point probably is, if we're talking in that sense that we just described, because Bayern, Dortmund, Atletico is probably there. Real Madrid, Barcelona, all these teams have not been at the highest quality in terms of, you know, just defensive organization or just organization in general. I guess when you watch Juventus, they're one of the more very compact and clear, you know, organization and things like that. So I think that's based on his question, I guess I would say yes, probably along with Atletico, if we're talking about in the sense of defensive organization. But, you know, the way we just talked about it, obviously isn't just that, but I think that's what he was trying to ask.
I have one additional argument. It's Chelsea.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true.
Good shout. That's a good shout.
Forgot about those guys.
Which is crazy, considering it's Conte's first season that he's managed to achieve that.
Yeah, I think he's extremely organizational. So I think they do a lot of shadow play and just they can do a lot of team exercises without opponents, and just even with opponents, it's very explicitly gone over. He organizes the team. A lot of the decisions that the team are making are more organizational, that everyone knows about the entire team, versus individual, like, kind of flair decision making. I mean, I think Hazard is the only one that has a little bit of freedom to, you know, go in overloaded zones when he feels like he isn't getting the ball, or when he gets the ball, he's incredible. In a 3-4-2-1, you rely a lot on your number 10s, and him receiving the ball is, you know,
Adi. Topic.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Went off topic.
what I might to add, which is somewhat related to the questions, that I think an advantage for Juve is that they were trained from Conte. And I think a very big part of Conte's work is that the players have a very, very clear idea how to behave on a certain position in a certain system. And they do the pure positional behavior, which is positional specific. That's what they are doing. Very, very clear and clean and fast. And they have a very clear idea how to work on that position. So they have a very clear base, and I think that might what's the fundament of the impression that the guy had who asked it the question.
All right, you completely dissect the question, like completely. Like it's nothing is. Only ashes are there.
That's big. Come on, what do you expect?
Nothing less. Nothing less. Okay, the next one. I expect like a discussion around about 30 minutes. Player ask, why do you think Zidane has done so well where more experienced managers have failed? Who wants to take it?
I don't think that. So why are you asking why I think that?
It's actually a good point. yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, right.
you should have asked why do I think that.
Adin, I guess you think that, right?
No, not me. I'm saying he should ask why do I think that when he was asking.
I had this discussion in the Spielverlagerung.de comments just a few days ago, and what you basically can say about Zidane when you compare him to his predecessors. Okay, is that he basically he's better than Benitez. That's it. Because Ancelotti won the Champions League as well, and he had a little bit of a different squad. He didn't have Kroos, and Mourinho had some better league seasons than Zidane, and he pretty much better league seasons even in certain cases, I think. And he had quite a different squad. He played with a center of Alonso, Khedira, and Özil, which is totally different to Kroos and Modric. Yeah. And he had a younger Varane and stuff like that. And so that's not really a proper comparison. And also the basic level of international top football was a bit higher some years ago. There are at the moment there are not really these super top teams like Barcelona and Bayern when they won the triple. They are not there. Maybe Juventus is maybe what the closest thing to that. But other than these, there are no every top team has problems. PSG has problems, Bayern had problems, Barcelona had problems, and Real beat Bayern very close, and therefore it's not so impressive. The results of Real are not so impressive. They don't have a very good goal difference in the league. They just have maybe the best squad in the history of football, and they win a lot of games, which is natural when you have one of the best squads in the history of football. So I think there's not really a reason to overrate the pure results of Zidane to how to rate the performances of the team is another question.
Alrighty. Next question comes from Halbraum. What can Juventus do to reduce the influence of Kroos and Modric? Anyone? Maybe Judah?
Yeah, so I think we touched on this earlier. I think we actually touched it in both sections. But anyway, no problem. We'll go over again. So I think there's three main ways of doing this. So if you are going to stick to the 4-4-2 defense, then one way of doing it is to have the strikers start in a bit wider, whereby you know they can threaten the pass from the centre backs into Kroos or Modric on either side, and then leaving Casemiro open, and then closing aggressively towards the centre when he receives the ball. That's one way, and of course, because Casemiro is less press resistant, he could struggle in those situations. I suggested the 4-3-3, which again, because you've got three people in the first line, you can block the centre and the half spaces, which would of course force them to go wider earlier. But that, as we discussed, could have some issues, especially considering the squad that Juventus have. I think within a 4-3-3, you'd probably have Mandzukic, Higuain, and Dybala as the front line, which would leave within their normal starting lineup, Cuadrado with Khedira and Pjanic as the three central midfielders. So you wouldn't probably want Cuadrado in that position. And you'd probably have to change it if you are going to use that structure. And then as Adin suggested, the 3-4-1-2 could be a more fitting structure and also a way to achieve that blocking the centre and the half space.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I guess shout out to all the people who also send in questions to PNM, for instance, or Shashi Singh. I guess we've already answered all these questions. I mean, really well thought out question, but yeah, we already answered them. So I guess they are satisfied. They got what they wanted. Excellent episode of our Spielverlang podcast. So I think it's time to wrap it up. You can find our episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher, and of course on our website under spielverlagern.com/podcast. And yeah, I would like to say thank you, gentlemen. Thank you to Martin Raffelt. He's at Martin Raffelt on Twitter.
Martin Raffelt is at Martin Raffelt.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
Yeah, you use your name on Twitter, yeah? That's something. Speaking of that, thank you to Adin Osman Basic. He's also He's also Adin Osman Basic on Twitter. Yeah, thank you to Adin, who was also was your first episode.
What about Awesome Basic? Adin Awesome Basic. I think that's my nickname now for you.
Sure. I love it.
I thought so.
Just use it. just use it in a legendary Facebook chat, on the Spielverlagerung Facebook chat. Yeah, and last but not least, thank you to Judah Davis. He's at, now here it comes, 1415 football on Twitter.
No, anymore.
He changed it.
I'm also using my name as my at now.
So you are at Judah Davis on Twitter.
Yep.
He's an adult now.
And I am also at Judah Davis on Twitter.
Yeah, that's correct.
I am really not sure if the joke is working in this language like it's working in my
head. It's not working.
It's not.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for this piece of advice. I am not a native speaker. Sorry for all the mistakes I made.
No problem. I think it was
my German light. Is very good.
It's okay. yeah, and of course I am CC_ECKNER on Twitter. So just follow us and follow our Spielverlagerung account. And yeah, I would like to say thank you to our listeners for sticking with us. And for now, we are out.